and welcome to episode 13 of the Composer's Roundtable. I'm Samuel Tornquist, or Turnquist, if you want to be Swedish, and I'm here with Simon Admirge, and we have lots of guests today. Three! It's really exciting. We thought we were going to make a little special here, so we have Christopher Siu, and I'm probably mispronouncing these names, and Mattia Chiappa, and Lautaro Arinjo. So, welcome to you three guys. It's so nice to have you here.
Thanks for having
us.
Thank you.
All right. So we just thought we were going to have a fun sort of real roundtable here with lots of people and talk about all kinds of things. And one thing I promised that we will talk about is Black Friday, but maybe not in the way you think. We'll see where it goes with that. You know, there's a lot of sales going on, I'm sure. You're running out to buy the latest thing. I don't know. I myself tend to be careful, but we can talk about that later. So I thought we can just start with something fun here. What is one composing creative trick that you got? Just something easy that anyone could try almost immediately. Should we start with you, Chris? You have one trick. Do this, buy this program, or do this with a pen, or start with strings, or I don't know. Do you have any?
Right. How about either go for a run or take a shower? Because I find like most of my ideas come when I'm not trying to write music. Mm. So I think a lot of us, like, we sit in our studios and we're trying to rack our brains for the next big idea, but it's really hard to write when you're trying to force yourself to write. So I tend to find better ideas when I'm like cooking, or if I'm running, or if I'm doing something else. A little lick comes to mind, then I have to rush back to my computer and write it down before I forget, and then the next day it's easier to flesh it out.
Oh, excellent. I like that. I agree very much. It's very good to try something else to sort of get into the mood or get out of your brain. So, yeah. Mattia, do you have any
good Yeah, thoughts? For me, I would say, like, if you're getting stuck, sometimes it can be helpful to step away from the instrument, you know, pick up, you know, some other instrument. Maybe, I don't know, like a bass or a ukulele or a guitar or something like that. Or even trying to, you know, figure out a line by singing it other than playing. Because a lot of what we do, if you have some kind of proficiency on the instrument, you kind of, it comes with muscle memory, right? So if you step out from, you know, the instrument and get a little bit out of your comfort zone, like, that can be helpful sometimes, I think.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah, very, very good. I agree with that too. I mean, I probably agree with all of this, but I just really appreciate those advice. It's good to hear from other people, and maybe you realize, oh, I haven't thought about that, or yeah, I do that. So you get confirmation. So Lautaro, do you have any good tips, trick?
Yeah. I think I'm going to go opposite direction of the previous ones. Push through. No, but this is, I don't know how to read sheet music. So my way to learn from green composers is by downloading MIDI files. And then I kind of look at the MIDI files, and I delete everything except that amazing part that I'm really in love with, and I try to analyze it. And that can be a good thing. Like, if you're totally stuck and you have no ideas or whatever, just take a song that you think is really good and just isolate the things that you think are really good, and try to understand what is it here that's so amazing? What can I learn from it? So, like, take a part from a classical piece, and yeah, this 2 second part is really awesome. How can I put it into a funk bass line that I made, or whatever, something like that? So you just start playing around, because I think that when you're stuck with your own ideas and you explore other ideas, then it can just kickstart you, and suddenly you have so many different new stuff to try out.
That's great.
Well, you know, if I'm getting stuck, I always jump in the shower and go for a run, and I grab my ukulele and my iPhone, and then I download a classical piece and put it in GarageBand, in my GarageBand template, and I'm able to go out and just get a fresh idea. So that's like the Uber tip. So, I guess thinking about this is, do not be afraid to embrace who you are as a composer and where you are, and stop, get out of your own head, and embrace who you are, embrace your sound, figure out what your sound is, embrace it. And, you know, we always are afraid of the imposter syndrome or whatever. We're all going to kind of draw from what we've heard in our experiences. But it's like, out of that, we're going to find our sound. You're going to be able to hear something that I've played somewhere and say, that sounds like Simeon. Or I'll hear something and say, hey, that sounds just like something Christopher Seal would do. Oh, that's got to be Matt. And then Larturo, oh, man, there's a cool 8-bit classical riff right there, you know. So it's embracing who we are, not being afraid, you know, and just not letting the technology and the tools get in the way, you know. So, yeah, embracing all of that. It's just so wonderful. There's so many opportunities available for us. It's just a wonderful time to be a musician. Yeah.
Love it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So my tip was that create a quick template of just very simple structure, chords, melody, maybe a drum, maybe a bass. Don't worry about the sounds and just work with that. Maybe a piano also. And don't worry about the melody. Don't worry about the sound. Don't worry about the any quality. Just get those ideas out. And then when you have a full structure, then create a song out of that. So otherwise, you tend to lose a lot of time.
You know, Sam, I jumping off of what you said, that I guess I've been hearing a lot about Scalar, and they've just released an update to Scalar. It's 2.5. I've never used it before, but it's like what I see from it is exactly something like what you would like to put in your template to get quick ideas, chord structures and bass lines and different things. So that's something that I'm really looking forward to diving in a little bit more. But anything that kind of is outside of yourself to kind of put a spark and just kind of maybe push you in a different direction, I think that's always a good idea, Sam.
Yeah, exactly. They told me about Scalar. I don't know anything about it. Maybe I'll check it out. I'm always a little bit worried about those MIDI composers. They might be great, so I'm not saying that, but I don't know. There's something, probably because I don't know better, that goes against the whole idea of composing. But
that's me too. Yeah, everybody says, "Oh, you got to try this. You got to try this," and it's like, I don't know. But you know, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Maybe one time.
Yeah, I'm seriously, I don't mind checking it out.
Yeah.
So, what's next, Simeon?
You know, how has the year been? I mean, I guess you know, how has this year worked out for everybody? You know, I think with March of 2020 was the world turned literally upside down, for lack of a better word. And every one of us have been affected by it in some way, especially the way that we do things. And for me, it created an end to the travel and what I normally done. I've been a traveling musician, playing gigs and different things. Man, for 25 years, and then all of a sudden, that is shut down. It was almost like 9/11. When 9/11 hit, all the airports were closed, and everything was turned upside down. This is a global turning. So, let's just see how has it affected Chris? How has it affected you over the past year? How do you see the way that this past season has been for you? And then we'll go around.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, I have to, like, my heart goes out to all those musicians who have, like, lost their live gigs and all that, because I can only imagine how difficult that must have been. And a couple of close friends of mine, they also, they had to stay home, and you know, they're like opera vocalists, for example, and they just can't find those jobs, and it's really, really hard. But I think for me, I was started to get burnt out actually around the time of February, March of 2020, because I was doing a lot of piano teaching. I was, you know, up to 30, 35 hours a week of just, you know, straight up teaching. And when the pandemic hit, it suddenly stopped and everyone started to take a break. And I was like, wow, this is actually really nice. And so the next few months, I actually started my online business, because literally that month of March, I was doing a video a day for that month. So midway through the month, everything shut down. And so it coincided perfectly, because that gave me a boost in the channel when people started jumping online more. And then, I built my first products later that year. And then the whole process has just been really, really nice so far, and being consistent with the channel and growing that audience and getting projects as a result of the channel. So for me, it's been freeing up a lot more time to just work on building my channel and my online business. And yeah, as everything starts to open back up, I'm excited to see how things really start returning back to normal, but also give everyone a chance to just get back out there, do their thing. But I think now more than ever, it's really important to just build some sort of online presence, whether if it's just having your music up there with maybe a playthrough and a voiceover or doing tutorials or whatever it is. But moving forward, I think being online in some form or some fashion is pretty, pretty essential.
Yeah. Hey, Mattia, what about you? How did this past
I can relate to what Chris said, because, you know, I was one of those kind of musicians. You know, I was mostly playing and before COVID and doing a little bit of teaching as well. But obviously that wasn't going to be an option anymore. And that kind of made me push through, you know, just trying to pursue a career in composing and orchestration and all these kind of things. So I kind of started to, you know, build up an online presence and just, you know, out of boredom, really, because I didn't really have anything to do other than that. But that kind of worked. And, you know, so yeah, I overall, I cannot really complain, I think, because obviously it was scary, because losing all your gigs and not having any kind of financial, you know, security, it's a scary thing. Yeah. But at the very same time, it kind of makes you have a very different kind of perspective on work and what you want to do with you know, your professional career. So yeah, it was a very interesting year for me.
Yeah. Laturo, how about you?
Well, this year has been very, very special for me in my life, I think. So in the beginning of the year, I decided that this year I was going to quit my job and start working freelancer. I used to be a system developer coder, and I wanted to get into the game industry doing game development as a coder, but also as a musician. So I thought that since it's quite easy to get a job as a coder, then I can build a network and spread my music and maybe also get gigs as a musician. So I was going to start at the end of the year, but then before the summer, I just got a client, like a big clothes store that wanted a mobile game as a marketing device. So they published it for like 4 weeks. So I programmed that for them, and I also composed a soundtrack. So the game is not available anymore, but the soundtrack is actually published on Spotify. So I just started like 6 months earlier than I should have. And then I had a couple of months, you know, when you're thinking not much happens in the industry during the summer. And I'm like, okay, how fast am I going to burn through my savings? Am I going to make it? Am I going to have to go back? And but it was the other way around. I was approached to do music for a game, and then that led to me getting on the game project as a developer. So I'm a partner now. We're doing a revenue share, because the game exploded and he needed a lot of help. So I'm doing all the audio and the coding as well. And from there, I got in touch with another huge game that wanted help to figure out. They're simulating this strategy game. They want to have tens of thousands of sci-fi battle tank units. And they were like, how can you program the audio? I mean, can you imagine the audio if you're in such an environment with tens of thousand tanks? It's not possible, because a computer can't play that many sounds, so you have to make up other strategies. So I'm working with them to figure out strategies on how to make the audio sound realistic, but also you don't want it to sound realistic, because nobody wants to experience what that would be like for real. You're supposed to be able to pan up the camera, like if you were 50 kilometers in there, and then zoom in really quick to where the action is. And that's also one of those things. Nobody has ever experienced what kind of sounds that would produce. So it's not possible to do it realistically. But yeah, cool. So a lot of things, it's the ketchup effect. So everything is coming now. I'm very thrilled.
That's great.
I have to say, I look very happy in everything we're talking about. The end of this really difficult period. I've been so lucky. This period has been so gentle with me. I've seen so much suffering around, and yeah, my heart goes out to everybody who didn't make it through.
Yes. Sam, what about you? How has this past season worked out for you?
Well, it's interesting. I think it's, if you're wondering why I have this voice, it's because I'm a little bit sick still, and my wife loves it, so I will drink whiskey after this is done. But anyway,
I love it too. Yeah. I'm actually jealous.
Yeah.
You have to make a plug-in.
Yeah, totally. So, no, if I might lose my voice. Yeah, true. But anyway, it has been rough. Both Lautaro and I, we are from Sweden, and we have had perhaps quite a different experience than many other countries. It's sort of been quite free here, if I compare it to many countries. But it's still been very, very difficult for culture in general. So that has been very noticeable. And this year, I kind of tried to really make a leap. And I mean, I started before, but to make a jump into, the YouTube was one thing, and starting this podcast and getting new, finding the Swedish market, getting to work here. And in the end, that's coming now. But in the beginning, it was like, man, I wish you called me last year. That was all the answer I got, because now everything's closed, basically. There's no music, there's no art, there's nothing. So it was like, so I was taking this like big step, tried to do this. So it's been kind of rough, to be honest. But in the end, there are some nice opportunities really coming my way. And then I also have, I don't know if I can include this, but I have a family and lots of kids, as many of you have heard in the background. And that's something you have to take care of. It's difficult to be a full-time composer and do all this and having time for that. I don't know if it's an excuse or not, but I've noticed that I have to step down a little bit because I've tried so many things. The YouTube is one thing, podcast another. And I would like to produce more. I have a lot of ideas in my backlog, but that has been going down, and I'll also when I'm getting other jobs, for example. So I don't know. It seems to be very difficult for everybody, but in a way, also this year has given me the opportunity to try all this, to even though it was rough, to really put in some effort into it, and it seems to have led to something in the end. So yeah.
And for me, it was like I was looking at another Alaskan tour and some different things, and then all of a sudden that doors just slam shut. It's like, what are we going to do? And so I think what we're all kind of saying in a way is that we've learned a new word during this season called pivot. We're pivoting. We have to adapt, and and I think the what it's caused, it caused something new to come. Because for me, I said I've got to stay productive. I've got to find something to be able to engage. So I started doing these piano videos, and especially because like Fluffy Audio and different ones were doing fundraisers during that time. So many people were doing fundraisers for COVID relief. And so that's kind of how that started. And then I think at the beginning, March 2020, I was like around 2,000 subscribers. And today it's 9,100 or so. Just in that short period of time. And it's just been an amazing opportunity to engage and to meet all of you guys and so many different composers. So a bad thing actually caused something good to happen for many of us. It was like a catalyst. I was talking to one developer the other day. It's like the eagle has to get the chicks out of the nest. And sometimes we've got to be uncomfortable, or stuff has got to shift to get us out of our comfort zone, to get us out of the nest so we can fly, so we can, just find our wings, find something else, because too many times we get stuck in a rut, stuck in a box, and this is what we do for 20 years. And then all of a sudden, we've got to have something that says, you need to try something different. And then we get out of the nest and we go, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And I think for me, that's what I'm discovering, is just the possibilities that are out there. So it's wonderful. So Yeah, pivot, adapt, improvise, and overcome is what we have to do.
I do want to say you guys are very polite, which we like, but feel free to interrupt any of us or say anything if you have any questions. So we'll have our questions here, but just wanted to say that. Yeah. So what I was wondering then, it might be interesting to continue with that. Actually, I just want to prep you a little bit, Simeon. Somebody had a question here about Aperture 4, 10,000 tank cannons recorded at Air Studios. And I thought maybe you know about that. We can talk about that later,
well,
perhaps.
I probably know just as much as you guys. I think what they did, they broke a world's record as far as the number of amps that they stacked up on these scaffolds. Okay. And it's got to be insane. I've watched just little clips, but it's just like they're insane. I mean, it's just like they can do some very out of the box type of things, but it's pretty amazing. Yeah, I don't know about the tank cannons, but I wouldn't put it past them.
I have a question about that what you were talking about. So you guys have a lot more experience than me when it comes to orchestral libraries. So sometimes I see these kind of flex ads. Never have so many, what do you call it, celli been recorded at the same time. We have never had so many brass players from this city in Italy at the same time, whatever. So like when you have like more than 10 of an instrument or some kind of big number, does it make a lot of difference? Because, I mean, you can't crank up the final volume anyway.
Well, I experienced that with, last week I did Hans Zimmer strings, the Spitfire Hans Zimmer strings, where they had like 80 cellos or 60 cellos and 24 violins. I mean, I don't know. It was an ungodly amount. So the thing that I experienced is, while it is huge, it does have a different sound, but yet it brings with it, you can't play it like this because it sounds like a pipe organ or a synth, yeah, or something. So, but I actually did something with that in a piece that I did, where I started with just a regular violin section. And then when I got to like the big part at the end, then I switched it over to those 48 violins, or however many they are, on that really big thing. So it did bring just an amazing punch. But that's the thing. More is not necessarily better. Sometimes the chamber string sound is so moving and emotional, and it punches you so hard, and it's only six players, where you could have 48 players, and it has no emotion, and it doesn't do anything for you. So it's all in the way that you apply it.
I actually feel like, I don't know if I'm right about this, but I don't feel that there's more or less players. I've heard a few of these libraries, and maybe there is a difference, obviously, but I've never, like, I need 6 to 6 violin players. I never felt that. I think there are other ways to make things big in good orchestrations. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think it's a recording thing, to be honest. I think to really get the effect of a huge ensemble like that, you would have to be at the place. Because I don't think you can capture, I mean, you can to some degree capture, you know, that kind of big sound, but eventually you're still using one microphone or 10 microphones or whatever. So yeah. I think it's very difficult to sample something like that. Because even like I've seen like, this has nothing to do with samples, but I've seen, I don't know, I think it was like a huge band with 100 musicians playing some Foo Fighters song or something like that. And I mean, it does sound huge, but it doesn't, you don't feel that big of a gap, you know?
No.
I think.
Yeah.
Other than the washiness, I think, and the lack of definition in the sound.
Right. Yeah, like in my personal experience, I find that it's a lot easier to tell the difference between, let's say, one versus three musicians, or even three versus six. But when it gets to like 20 versus 40, it's not as much of a difference, right?
Yeah.
So, my personal productions, it's like I tend to use a two horns patch, but like pontophonic legato type of thing for a lot of that stuff. But if I start to go, you know, with 12 horns or 20 horns, it's going to sound a lot more muddy. But even just like having two horns playing together is so much more warm than just like one horn, for example. Yeah, you can really feel that.
So I got to follow. Yeah. I got to follow up on the comment about the 10,000 cannons. So it was like, yeah, that was just like a tongue in cheek. But Spectrasonics with one of their titles, one of their expansions, they actually went to the NASA sound laboratory and recorded the loudest sound on Earth there.
Crazy.
It's where they test rocket engines and so it's just like. It's like if you're standing in the middle of this area, it could literally just melt your organ. I mean, it's just like the sound. So it's like, yeah, it's you know, you got to separate the hype and all the marketing stuff. And I think that's one of the unfortunate things that we're in. We're in this age of marketing and we've got to, you know, this one's got to be better. Oh, this is we've never recorded anything like this before. Have you really, you know, so it's the reality distortion field that we have to really focus, you know, to kind of sort through.
Getting into the sort of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I don't know if you've read that book, but there is, I don't know if you know this, somebody might tell it better than me, but there's a story about this band, the loudest band ever in the universe. Like they were on different planets because they were destroying the planets. They were so loud, basically. And that's sort of going to that hype. You have to read a book because it's better. But yeah. I thought about that. And yeah, I agree with that. I think maybe it becomes a little bit of experience because I don't know if we're going into the Black Friday here. But I'm not that hyped anymore. I realized I'm not so attracted anymore.
I think we're weary. We're worn out.
If I really need something, then great. Yeah, it's cheaper. Fantastic. But yeah, we can get that later. But yeah, I think it has to do with experience. You have tried a few things out and you know, and it's like, yeah, whatever.
I do think the 10,000 Canon library is going to be on Piano Book, though. So keep a lookout for that.
All right.
No, I don't know. Hey, listen, I wouldn't be surprised. Well, Christian dropped that piano from like 50 feet and sampled it. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're watching, if you guys are watching 10,000 cannons, man, that would be incredible.
Have you had any, it sounds interesting, coping strategies? Have you taken care of yourself in a certain way? I can start with, for example, I have made sure that I meditate frequently. And, you know, this is different for everybody, but just to keep my mind, you know, stable, I'm getting older, I guess, but I take care of my sleep as much as I can, you know, so I'm not exhausted every day. So that kind of stuff of what I eat, you know. So before I babble too much, I wanted to throw it out at you. Have you thought about that, or is it the same as before or anything like that? Anyone would like to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start. I mean, for me, I'm trying to work out like 3 to 5 times a week, and it's as simple as going for a run and doing a little bit of resistance, but generally, as long as I exercise in the morning, shower a little bit, then I feel more fresh for the day. And if I don't eat too unhealthy, then I'm not too guilty about myself either. So overall, it's just a little bit of exercise here and there. And yeah, I prefer to do it in the morning just because I think if I leave it for the evening, then it's something that's in my mind that I have to do. But if I just get it out of the way, then it's already done.
Where do you live, Christopher?
I'm in Ontario, Canada. So I'm a little bit more north than like US, for example.
Is there Mattia?
I'm in the UK. I'm in London.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm at the home of Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah, that's true.
Love it.
Literally.
Lautaro, you're in Stockholm, right?
Yes.
Yes. Wow. Island is south of Sweden, so he's in the middle, and I'm the south. So.
Yeah. But whenever you come up to the civilization, we have to take a
the civilization. Yeah. Yeah. There's a little bit of a vendetta going on between the Stockholm and Malmö, where I live. Stockholm is the capital of Sweden, and Malmö is a shithole. But it's still a nice city. It's got a lot of culture going on. Oh, and they hate each other, these two. Yeah, they do.
Malmö is really, really nice. And you know what? I'm not even from Stockholm. I was born in Västerås.
Oh, okay.
It sounds like Westeros, but it's not. It's actually called Västerås.
Västerås, yeah. That's true.
I'm not making it up. So I don't have this Stockholm... patriotism.
No,
I just
no worries.
Think it's funny sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, I like it too. I mean, if Stockholm had a real football team, then we'd be in serious trouble.
We were talking about coping skills.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, I mean, I like what you say, Christopher, and you look like you work out. So nice job there. I think it is important to do those things. Seriously.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm guilty of not doing that, and it's just such a challenge. Yeah. It's such a challenge. You've got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Yeah. It's not something that happens automatically. You've got to be intentional about it. And I'm just like, I'm the poster boy for like, you got to get up and do it. You know,
I think it's more of a mental thing than anything, though. You know, yeah. Like even if you don't see the immediate results, it makes your body feel better. But it also it's like another responsibility that you have conquered for that day, you know?
Yeah.
It feels better, that's all, as well.
And I do want to say, I mean, I don't know your age, Simeon, but I imagine we're about the same age, actually. So I'm 45, if that matters to anyone.
Oh, well, I can be close to that. Yeah.
Okay.
I would love to be close to that.
Sorry, I don't know. What I was trying to say is that I imagine...
And I'm not talking.
Yeah, I imagine you other guys, you might be younger. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. And I've noticed that, I don't know, 30, 35, that, you know, one thing that is really difficult with working out, and it doesn't have to be that much so hard, it's to start. Like the two first weeks is a pain. It really is not fun. It sucks. Nope. And the older you get, it sucks longer. So you have to sort of really remember that it might take 2-3 weeks before it's fun. And that's really tricky. But then you really enjoy it. And it's kind of what I say with composition too. If you haven't written music for a while, you know, the songs you try to force out of you the first weeks might be really painful and sound like shit. And then you're like, hey, this is kind of fun after 2-3 weeks. So yeah, anyway. What about you, Mattia?
I mean, coping with... Like for me, it was mostly like basic stuff, you know, trying to speak to people. Because lockdown was quite intense here in the UK. It was long. And I live on my own, you know, I was here all the time. So just, you know, trying to keep sanity by, you know, speaking with my parents in the evenings, with my friends as much as possible. And really, that's it. You know, try to eat healthy as well, not to have too much junk food. But yeah, otherwise, like it can be quite tough. Like for me, I was really focused on the work and really focused on my own music. So having something that keeps you, you know, on earth, I think it's important in these times because you kind of lose yourself. You can lose yourself in the work.
Actually, I do want to hear from the other guys, but I just thought about something. Have you ever guys ever been guilty of, you have a deadline, you need to work really hard, and you just don't have time to cook, so you just order something? You know, that might not be the healthiest thing. I've definitely done that.
Yeah, many times.
I was going to say, guilty, how many times a week?
All right. Yeah. No, but I meant like, you know, when you, it's great when you have a lot of work and you have deadlines, but it can happen that you actually take less care of yourself at that times, which is difficult. I don't know.
I mean,
I think I've eaten more tuna fish during the pandemic than I've eaten in my whole life. Tomorrow is, well, no, not tomorrow is Thanksgiving, so no tuna fish tomorrow, but maybe on Friday.
So what's your strategy, or what have you, what do you do, Lautaro?
Well, last winter, I started having, for the first time in my life, sleeping problems. So I couldn't sleep sometimes several days a week. So, and I solved it by just making sure that I would go out and run or take a walk before the sun went down. For the ones that view this and don't know, up here in Scandinavia, and I'm sure in Canada as well for Christopher, like in the middle of winter, it's dark at 3 p.m.
So I
need to get up, work a little bit, and then for lunch go out and walk so that I have some light and I see a bit of sun, and that takes care of it. So I'm doing that now since a couple of months again, because it's getting darker and darker. Yeah, so that's my way.
That's good. It is rough, the darkness. I I've lived in many countries. I'm Swedish, but I've lived in many countries. And we moved back 2017. And we're still not used to the darkness because I lived a lot in Spain and also in America. I lived, but it's just that the light. It's very difficult. It's not the cold because we're very comfortable in Sweden. It's the light.
Although, like, not now, because we're not in the best part of the winter. I have to say that when you have a really good winter in Sweden, Christopher, is it the same in Canada? Like, when it's really cold and you have lots of snow, then you also tend to have a brighter sun. And, well, it's colder, but it's actually very nice until it gets dark. Because now it's more gray and kind of cold and kind of damp and dark, but a really cold, nice winter day is really beautiful.
Yeah, it's really true. Like, well, I haven't specifically noticed the sun either getting brighter or darker, but I just know that on an average day now, it looks like midnight at 4 p.m. So after my students come, you know, when they come, it's like, it's kind of the sun's going down, but as soon as they come back up after the lesson, it's like, wait, is it like 10 o'clock? Oh, no, it's not.
Do you have snow where you live, Chris?
We do, yeah. Usually it comes around, middle November, December. It lasts until February, March. So it's nice because we get extremes.
I love snow. We don't have it here.
Come visit. I'll show you.
I always thought it was cooler to live in the southern part of Sweden because it's a little bit warmer, but I think it's probably better to live where Lautaro is because they have snow. And where we live, it's just gray and it sucks. It's basically, there's no sun.
Yeah, like here in London, it's gray all the time, every day.
Right. It's not fun.
No. I think the gray is the worst. It's just, you know, so I, you know, you have something called seasonal affective disorder, SAD. It's a real thing. And it absolutely affects your emotions my wife, she says, honey, we need to turn on some lights. So we turn on the lights, you know, because it's like she can tell, oh my God, it's dark outside, it's gloomy and gray, you know. It's just turn on the lights. So and you can actually get full spectrum lights that are like sunlight you know, to try, you know, just to kind of change the atmosphere as much as you can to, and then I pet the cat a lot. You know, he's my best bud, and you know, and it lowers your blood pressure, and it's the best.
you guys have pets, by the way, because I have a dog. So,
oh, nice. I'm allergic to like cats and dogs. So.
Oh no. Okay.
I wish.
Lata, you have cats, don't you?
Yeah, I'm gonna get one.
It's kind of soft too.
We can send Chris a Furby for Christmas, and
do you have any pets?
No, I always wanted one, but I can't have it. My landlord doesn't allow it, and my parents never wanted to get one to get me one. So
I was gonna ask. I know the English London landlords are rough, so I've lived there.
Yeah, I mean,
okay,
I could.
Wait. Okay.
I could get one. He would.
Oh no!
He's gonna get this. Oh, I can't get my dog. Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
I think he wouldn't notice. Nobody would notice, but you know.
Yeah,
it's a risk. I know. No, but it's very nice to have. I like cats. I'm not a cat person like that, but I really enjoy them. But dogs is my thing.
So this is Saban. So we would say hi to the world.
Hi.
Here,
composer's cat table or whatever you call it.
Yeah,
it's great.
And because Arturo's cat looks familiar. Saban was Sarah until we took him to the vet and they said that's not a girl, it's a boy, because he adopted us, you know. He adopted us, so we couldn't tell, you know. The neighbor had named him Sarah, and it was like, no, you're so pretty. Okay,
hey, I'll use the cats as a composing trick. You mean you can just throw them on a keyboard or something like that? I was thinking.
Oh no. I'll let him go back to bed.
I never use them, but they use that trick sometimes. Yeah. And it's never turned out good.
No. I wrote some incredible improvisations. But
I think Mozart wrote some cat music or something.
Yeah,
I don't know anything about it, but
use the tools at his disposal. There you go.
Yeah, it does ring a bell. Yeah, I don't remember, but I felt like I've heard that too. So that's probably true somewhere.
What did I miss?
Mattia said that maybe, or he thinks that Mozart used cat, or wrote music.
For oh,
cat.
There was actually a cat piano. I promise you, I saw a picture of this cat piano. They had these compartments with different cats and keys that would irritate the cats and make them kind of do different things. It was just like, and it was like medieval. The SPCA or whatever it is would not be favorable to that.
You know, I would ask and say, all Americans can absolutely hate me now, and this is not true. I'm just being silly, but I find that there's a lot of good musicians from Canada that I really like, and there's a lot of good musicians from America. So this is a very stupid argument, but I was going to say, why do you produce so many great artists and interesting musicians in Canada? What do you think, Chris? Is this because of the weather or the culture?
You know what? Maybe it's just that there's less competition here. So then the people who stand out, there's less people covering them up, let's say. I actually have no idea. But
What do you think, Leonardo? No?
No, I think Christopher is just being humble. I don't think that logic works.
No, I'm serious. Like, I have no idea why. But
you know, to everybody outside of your country, I mean, we always think that you guys are from the USA until somebody or you say that, hey, we're from Canada.
Yeah.
Oh, then we know. So you are always being compared to the whole of the United States.
Sure.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, take a few. Joni Mitchell, for example, everybody thinks she's not from Canada. But, oh, well, they know if they like her, obviously. But I'm just saying, that's an example.
Yeah. And everyone says we have an accent. Like I don't really know what they're talking about because I haven't actually met anyone.
You just said it about.
Yeah.
What did I say?
Talking about. I can't do it.
Talking about.
I'm not an American. I shouldn't say this. Simeon, stop me. But I can hear that there's a little bit going on.
Okay, that's fair. There you go.
You're just a hoser. You're just like good day, you know.
But Chris, you don't really have a really strong accent. I'm sure there are.
No.
Worst cases. Worst cases, I like it.
You know, thank you.
There's a comic somewhere with him. This is about 10 feet, and then he brings him a shoe. I can't say it, but it's like a boot, basically. You can't.
Oh, yeah. There.
So, yeah. Anyway, where were we?
Moving on. What has been the most exciting, I guess, development or library or advancement or whatever that's really got on your radar that really made you excited? Let's go to Mattia.
Yeah,
Mattia.
It's tricky because I don't really get excited about these sorts of things, to be honest. But if I would have to pick something, it's probably like recently I bought the whole, you know, Cinematic Studio series, and I've been enjoying using them very much. Simply because it's just a no-brainer, you know, like it's so well packaged. And you know, it has a lot of, you know, useful articulations, and the libraries are very well balanced, which is not something that every developers do. So yeah, I've been enjoying using those, but I might be a slightly more, you know, like a slightly unusual composer. I'm not that interested in sounds. I kind of tend to like music in general, you know, the basics of music, like melody and harmony. And of course, having nice tools and things that can make your music sound nice can be a good little extra. But to me, it's not something that I care deeply about.
Oh, follow-up question. What do you care? Well, you kind of said it, but tell me more what you care about, actually. I mean, because you've still chosen that library, for example.
Yeah, for me, the selling point of those libraries were, you know, the balance, because it's very accurate out of the box. You know, if you play a fortissimo on brass, you get a fortissimo, And that's you know, that's really important to me, because obviously having something like that can make your mockups sound a little bit more realistic, you know, because they behave like a real kind of orchestra would. And yeah, that was important to me. And so I that kind of made me balance the whole template I'm using at the moment to, you know, the Cinematic Studio series, and try to match the dynamics and try to match all the levels and little things like this. So I think what I'm using at the moment, this new template, is a big improvement from the previous one. It sounds the same though. It's not like it's a huge difference in terms of sounds, because that's you know, that's what the orchestra sounds like, right? Yeah. So it doesn't really matter whether, I mean, at least in my opinion, it doesn't really matter what kind of libraries you use and what kind of aesthetics the developers are going for. But certainly having a template that behaves, you know, the way a real orchestra would, is helpful when it comes to doing, you know, real orchestration.
Yeah, after thinking about it a little bit, I think especially if you have a core orchestra that is like your workhorse, you start to appreciate the more niche libraries that come out that do one thing really, really well. And so after thinking about it for a little bit, I think there's a couple developers, straight ahead samples, jazz libraries, and then there's also musical sampling and performance samples that all do really niche products, but really well. And I'm so bad at programming and tweaking and adjusting noises, and I want all that stuff, and I just want to drag in a patch and just play it. Yep. And it have it sound good. And man, those libraries, they have a little functionality of like tweaking whatever, but they really focused on the sound and the performance and the playability. And that's what drives the most inspiration for me, is when I don't have to look around for the sounds that I want. I can just drag it in and it works. And those do a great job.
That's definitely sort of my dilemma, because on one hand, I completely agree with Mattia on what they do, those sounds, for example, and what they can. But I find that they are a lot. There's a lot to work with them. You have to really get good at them.
Yeah.
Latency, and it takes a lot of programming sometimes, so I can really be ugh. So
it's very difficult.
You have to find a work way to make those quicker, those libraries. Otherwise, they sound the best. So I'm with more. The more and more I work, I'm going towards Chris, like, I really want a library, just load it in and it's done. What I play, that's what it sounds like. I mean, that sounds, it's a lot to ask for, I know, but
yeah.
But there seems to be some headway. Some libraries are starting to do that stuff. So yeah.
I think the main difference is between like a library like that and something that is a little bit more performance based, is that having something that is not, you know, is not that intuitive out of the box kind of makes you think like a real instrumentalist, you know? Like, these are not libraries to me, these are like real instruments. So if I'm not just kind of vamping around and improvising on the piano, like, I'm kind of writing parts that would be more idiomatic for the instrument, I think. Because there is less space for improvisation.
Yeah, in a way, the instrument teaches you, if you don't know already, what sounds good and how you can play with them, yeah.
Yeah,
it's a very good point.
Well, I am, for one, super excited about finding a library that it sounds silly, but changed my life. No, because I have had huge problems just understanding how to make these libraries sound realistic. I've tried several. I don't want to mention any names, but I've been frustrated for many years. Samuel, you know, that's how we met, because I really appreciated Samuel's YouTube videos on these topics, because it's a difficult thing to come into if you don't have a proper training, because I wasn't only learning how to make a orchestra library sound realistic. I was also learning what is orchestral music. What makes it sound, I mean, I didn't have that kind of experience from the real world like you guys. So it was a lot of things to do, I guess. So maybe it's a little bit unfair, because when I tried the first libraries, I also had not anywhere near the knowledge or experience that I have now. But I really have the feeling that I tried the Vienna Symphonic Library, and for me, everything just fell to place, and I'm totally in love with it. I think it's so awesome. Good. I can't stand with any library these presets that are supposed to make it, or that makes it sound realistic and puts all the instruments in their place and stuff like that, because they're often very panned. And when I work with something that's too panned, I can't stand it. It just cuts in my hair. Oh, yeah. So when I'm composing, I need to more or less center everything, and I want to have everything dry. I think also because I still need the experience of understanding exactly how all the sounds are from different instruments, and too much reverb makes that difficult. So, and then when I'm finished composing, I start panning them and I add reverb and stuff like that. But usually I like to have a lot of raw sound. Like I want to be able to hear that bite in the cello or double bass. So I'm very happy with Vienna because it sounds so realistic. They have very good legato patches, so it's very easy to just find one patch, and I don't have to program it while I compose. It's not gonna sound realistic, but it's gonna sound good enough for composing. And the parts are going to sound very expressive where I wanted to. And then when I started getting done with the composition, I can go and tweak the things and program where I need it to sound better and stuff like that. And you can get them totally dry, and you have the whole setup with a convolution reverb. It makes it sound like they're actually in the place where they were. I'm not sponsored, by the way.
We can actually ask you a question, Lautaro, because I did recently a video on the Vienna Ensemble Pro, which is not an instrument. And so they liked that. So they gave me, oh, you want to check this out and blah, blah. So I tried a few of their instruments in their Synchron player, which I don't think is the same as Vienna. But something, there's a lot to say about those libraries, but something that was really impressive is how quickly the patches load, like incredibly, and how easy it is to play instantly. Like, the legato patches that you can play them slow or fast. I don't know how they do it. And they also have some interesting trickery with the memory. So I don't know, you cannot purge or anything, but apparently it handles it itself. And even though I loaded like a whole orchestra, I used only 6 gigabytes of RAM. I don't know how they did how they do that. So crazy. There's something going on. Maybe they use this more the SSD drive or something.
They really leverage the SSD and NVMe drives. That's really what you've got to have to really get the best out of them.
Do they all do that? That's my question. Sorry, Lautaro. Do they all do that? Is Vienna the same? Like that? It's very fast and easy to play immediately.
Yeah. So I only bought the first volume of their special edition series. There are 9 volumes, but the first volume gives you everything you need for a whole orchestra. But after a while, you're going to start thinking like, oh, I would like to have more of these options. I would like to have more of this. And then you have to buy other volumes, of course. But the first volume is good enough. But now they have everything on sale. So you can get the whole 9 volumes for half price. Wow. And the best thing is that they're offering a free 30-day trial. So you can download everything and use it for 30 days. So I have that. I'm going to buy it. I haven't done it yet, but I tried it all. And I can tell you, all of it is smooth like that. I think it's just really, really, really well programmed.
That's the thing about like samples, you know? I mean, with the technology we have, in addition to, of course, just listening to recordings, I've learned so much about instruments just by playing good libraries and learning their ranges, learning what's idiomatic, what sounds good. And some libraries don't loop the sustain, so they cut off naturally after amount of time. And so it just shows you like the tones and how everything fits. And something, because like a lot of times in recordings, you don't have access to the stems or the, you know, the multi-tracks, and the libraries, they give you those individual instruments, and it's just a beautiful thing. So great learning tool.
Yeah, so actually, Vienna was, I don't know why, but it's never been, I've never been on my radar or something, but just through this thing, I found out. So yeah, I think it's a good tip.
Yeah. I have to say that one thing that I think they're really bad at, maybe it's a difficult task, but it's extremely complex because it costs a lot. So I was on their site for several times during many weeks, and I was just browsing through, and I'm like, I don't know what to buy. Like, if I buy from this series, is the other series going to be better? And then if I bought from this series, it's going to be compatible with the other one? Or are they going to sound bad together? And yeah, it's just so many things, and they have so many different product lines.
The other thing about Vienna that I think other developers really need to take to heart is they have that 14 or 15-day return policy. So if you do buy something, let's say you buy the $1,000 Synchron piano, you know, the full version with all the micro, and you hate it. Well, within that 14-day window or 15-day window, it's really unheard of. But I think it just speaks so well that they put the that's great customer service. Like most companies, is like, once you buy it, it doesn't matter if you hate it or you've dropped $1,000 or whatever. It's just like, it's a bust.
Down the drain.
And so that is very difficult. And for me as a reviewer, I get a lot of libraries. Well, most of the libraries, and Christopher, I know you get some libraries, NFRs. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, I'm saying if somebody had purchased this and were disappointed, they would be stuck with just this huge expense and not be able to do anything. So to have that option is really, really something. I commend them for doing that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I find that they're very dishonest with this thing because I just realized someone told me in gaming now, because it's been a big thing, you know, this digital products, you know, you bought the game, it's yours, you can't return it. But I think, at least in Europe, by law, you have to be able to return any game you purchase within a few hours, whatever it is. It's not a lot, but there's something like that. Yeah. Why can that apply to these?
I can see why, though, they wouldn't do that with samples, because it's not like a program, you know. You could actually use the samples. You could re-record them.
Oh yeah,
and remake, you know, make a library of your own out of the samples they provide. So I can see why not many developers would do that.
I buy that argument. I think there's definitely something to that. But I also feel like it's a little bit of an excuse because it's
too
much money and it's not...
Yeah, that's true.
It's not friendly to the... What's it called?
Consumer.
It's not consumer friendly. We're talking about a lot of money. And as you said, it's like, yeah, it was not for me. I don't really... I could be wrong.
They should do like a light version.
I wonder if they really would like make a lot of loss of money if really a lot of people would abuse that system.
Plus people pirate those libraries anyway.
Yeah,
that's true.
Well, it's funny we talk about refunds and stuff, because in the digital marketing space, I think it's a much better practice to actually not flaunt, but proudly show your refund policy, because then it takes away all the risk, right? And people naturally feel more trust towards you as well. And so it's literally if you don't like it within 30 days, whatever, get it back. But at the same time, if it's a digital product, it's easy to revoke access. Whereas samples, if you download it, you can't revoke their access. They already have access those files,
so a library like or a software like Vienna or the other ones we've been talking about, I think there you should be able to return it, because you're buying the technical features, you're buying being able to load it up fast, you're buying being be able to play the Legato patch. Imagine if you would take something like East West or Vienna and you could return it, so you would record all the samples, like what, all the 1.6 million samples?
Yeah,
no, that's true. That's them? A good point.
And what would you do with those samples?
It would be... I agree with that.
But can I bring up the opposite? Because I think it needs to be said. There's something that made me upset. I think that the East-West Composer Cloud is a really, really good thing for people that don't have that much money, that want to try orchestration and or just don't want to invest so much money because maybe they're just doing it for fun or whatever. So, but their policy is horrible. I couldn't believe it. I saw it now. So you pay for a year and it literally says, which is good because it's honest, but it says that you will pay for a year. After a year, the subscription will be renewed unless you cancel it 24 hours before. Afterwards, it's not possible to get your money back. And that's, so they want you to subscribe to something. And after a year, you're supposed to remember the date. And if not, they're going to charge you hundreds of dollars. And I mean, I would like to believe that these kind of companies would be like, hey, we don't want your money because a technicality. We don't want you to sit there one year going, oh, I don't use this product. I was one day late. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. So a trick that I do sometimes in that is like I will go in and change my payment type, or I will go and do something a little different, or get a prepaid credit card with like $5 on it, and then they try to charge it and it gets rejected. So there's you know, but I agree with you. We need to feel that taken care of. You know.
We want to feel that we can trust them.
Well, I agree. But when you buy for a whole year, because I think you could do monthly or a year, you get a little cheaper, I guess, when it's all year. I understand. Mm-hmm. Can't you cancel it before? Like, you know, 6 months in, you cancel it, but you still have the year?
Yeah, you can. You can, of course. But they have another thing where you pay monthly, but you have agreed to pay for a whole year. So then you can't cancel it. But in any case, it's about you remembering to do it.
Yeah.
So, for example, you can put an alarm in your calendar, or you can put a date in your calendar. So it pops up after years, like, remember to cancel this. But that's my point. It shouldn't have to be like that. I mean, there are a lot of companies that, for example, send out an email saying, in 3 weeks, we're going to renew this. Just heads up, if you want to, cancel it before then. I mean, that's all it takes. Then I feel like they care about it. They don't want my money unless I intended to give it to them.
I agree. Plus, you're kind of stuck with it anyway. So it's a very clever kind of business model, because if you want to access your music, you know, you have to keep paying the subscription. That's why I hate that. I would never do something like that.
I completely agree, Mattia. I always say it's great to try for a month or two with East West because it's so cheap, you know. But
honestly,
I don't want subscription myself. No,
I don't think it's a beginner friendly kind of thing, because like you can get very good results with the native stuff in Logic or whatever kind of DAW you use.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what I used at the beginning when I was learning. I couldn't bother buying, you know, expensive libraries and stuff like that. Just try to learn what you have. Mm. You know, you don't have to have anything to write music. And I think it's really important to understand, because otherwise you just keep buying stuff that you don't need. Even later on, when it becomes a job or something, you know, if you don't need a library, you just don't buy it, you know. But people can kind of get stuck into this loop, you know, of having just to get the latest plugins and latest sounds. It's not going to make your sound music any different.
That's right.
You know what the thing is? That I started being interested in trying to produce orchestrated music. I came from doing very synthetic music, like retro chiptune 8-bit kind of music. Yeah. So the reason I wanted to try orchestral music is because I love that sound. I wanted to be able to do that myself. And that transition wouldn't really have a point if my aim wasn't to make it sound realistic. So that technical part is quite important for me, at least, because I still do a lot of chiptune and 8-bit music. And also the other way around, from what I learned from the orchestral music, I'm applying it with 8-bit as well. But I mean, if the realism wasn't important for me, then I wouldn't have...
I think realism is, I think with realism, if you want your music to be realistic, you kind of need experience more than having to have the libraries. Because even if you have the most, the library with the, I don't know, most amount of articulations and most deeply sampled on the market, if you don't know how to use it, it's not going to sound realistic anyway.
Yeah, it's very,
very true. So, and how about the other way? Like if you would take the stock sounds of Ableton Live and you're really good.
I mean, I don't know about Ableton Live, but you can definitely do realistic mockups with the stock sounds in Logic. That's what I used to do.
So I actually started in Ableton, and one of the reasons I switched to Logic because the Ableton sounds suck. they're literally so bad. Like the strings actually sound so
that explains cool. something.
Yeah,
that explains
something. Like I couldn't do a thing.
But I think there's
well, listen. Problem. I was in the mall. I worked at the piano and organ stores where you have this keyboard organ that has all of these sounds, and this is like in the 80s. Okay, yeah. So you pull up a trumpet and you play in this sound. And it's like, man, doesn't that sound like a trumpet?
Yeah.
Wah, wah. No, it does. You know, so it's like, but yeah, man. Listen, yeah, I got the T-shirt, and I was a very bad seller, but I played. People would just, you know, we would play and have fun, but you know, yeah. But there's a balance, you know. You learn to use what. Hey, listen, this XP50 back here was all that I had back in the mid 90s, and I had to do all the sequences from there inside of the box, inside of the sequencer there. So you have to learn to use what you have. I really agree with that. And $1,000 BBC orchestra, if it lands on your front door today, and you don't know the basics, it doesn't matter. So I would say start like what Mattia is talking about. Start with start where you're at, because the tool is not going to make your work any better. I mean, you know, Da Vinci could take a hammer and chisel off the side of the road and create a masterpiece, and I could spend $10,000 on a hammer and a special chisel and make a mess. It's all about our experience and things, and it's wonderful. We have so many options, and sometimes that's a bad thing sometimes because we're always looking for the next fix, the next orchestral library fix, so to speak, you know, because we're not content. And then it's a part of the industry too. It's that discontentment. We've got to have the next thing, or we've got to, you know, or your music is not going to sound as good. But, you know, I think having discussions like this is very important because it pulls us back down to earth and say, you know, start with where you're at, start with the basics, create the most beautiful music that you can with what you have, and see what happens. Surprise yourself, you know.
Were you going to say something there, Mattia, before I...
Yeah, I mean, these options thing can be tricky because if somebody doesn't know how to get started, you know, there are so many libraries, there are so many different things you can get nowadays, and, you know, can be very difficult to pick one. But I think there definitely are more beginner-friendly, you know, libraries than just, you know, like, I don't think, you know, developers necessarily advertise the products for what they really are, you know.
That is so true.
I was thinking Graham, that was on our podcast last episode, a really nice episode. I recommend you to check out. Very interesting composer. He also said something I forgot, but he's totally true that, you know, if you look at your songs that you made 10 years ago, it might be true that you weren't so experienced. But one thing you can tell is that you used an old technology, so it doesn't sound as good. If you had a real player, it probably would have sounded okay. So,
yeah.
That it's very true that it's always new stuff. So even though we are blown, it's like, wow, this is amazing today, you know, in 10 years, maybe not. But also an interesting challenge that I thought about, but I haven't taken yet, is that the BBC, the first one, what is it called?
Discovery.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I've been trying to see if I can create something that sounds good with that library. And I'm not putting the library down because, you know, it can be free and it's a really neat idea. But where I'm at and what I sort of need from my libraries, it definitely doesn't have at all what I want from it. So I don't know if you ever thought about that balance of finding, you know, But I'm going to take that challenge one day, see if I can create something that sounds okay with it.
I would like to say something about that, because I think that I have a point of view that's unique here, because you guys are professionals with a lot of experience. So if there's somebody that was in my, where I was 3 years ago, struggling to learn these things, Mattia talked about the stock library of logic. So I'm really going to check that out, because from what Christopher is saying, you have the experience of Ableton and Logic. So it seems that Logic has really good things, and that's really, really excellent. But I would like to say that it does matter what library you have, especially if you're a beginner, because the amount of complexity you're adding on a beginner, if the library requires you to have experience, or for example, Samuel, I really hope you take that challenge. I'm sure you're going to ace it, because you're going to listen to the sounds and you're going to say, this library is not good for this kind of music. The only kind of music that's going to sound good is going to be this kind of music. And you're going to be able to do that. But if you're not experienced, and you're not going to have 5-10 different ideas and 5 different styles, you're probably going to struggle to have one idea in one different style. And if that library doesn't work with that, you don't have the tools to understand, am I not composing right? Am I not good enough? Mm-hmm. Or is it the library?
That's a good point.
So it adds a huge complexity, which can be very, very frustrating.
That's a very good point.
Make it difficult to learn. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's what I like about the orchestra, Sonia Scores, the orchestra series. Their newest, the $99 Essentials that they came out with, I mean, it's fabulous for what it is. And it kind of helps you get into, it's more ensemble type of things, but yet it's very quick to really put something really nice together. Yeah.
Honestly, that's how I started, you know, when to buy libraries and to get to, you know, into this kind of orchestral world, just, you know, try to gradually, you know, go from ensembles to individual sections, because, you know, I didn't start like that long ago. And obviously, you know, but even like four or five years ago, we had very different kind of tools, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And that seemed to be the popular options, you know, the Albions, you know, from Spitfire Audio. And so that's where it come from, you know.
Think how far we've come in 4 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. if we just take this four-year period of where we were and where we are now, it's incredible. It's been like a renaissance or an explosion of possibilities. It's been really fascinating.
Yeah. Listen, guys, we've been on a little bit for an hour, and I'm very much enjoying this. But I just thought, since I promised everybody we will talk a little bit about Black Friday, I thought I kind of think we already are anyway. So I want to just put that in. And somebody said that they actually, because of Chris, they bought the Cineperk 50% off. So it's his fault. But they're
I'm not sorry.
Listen, I get this all the time. It's like, I bought this, I watched your video and I bought this library and I can't tell my wife. And then I had another guy say, every time I'm watching a video, my wife walks by and says, who is this Simeon you're listening to? It's just like, it's not my fault. Listen, you have free will. God has given us free will.
Yes.
To choose the libraries, you know, I'm just the messenger, you know.
Yes.
It's so funny.
I just want to throw in here about Black Friday, and we can do whatever. I just want to throw some ideas into the pile and we can come up. So I thought, like, are there any sales that you know of, what to buy and why not to buy, and why do you not need more instruments, or why do you, all right, or do you really need another plugin? I thought it can be interesting to put that in. And do you have any strategies if you buy, you know, anything like that? What do you think of Black Friday? Do you use it? Do you buy? Do you participate? What do you think about it? So, free for all.
I'm not gonna buy anything.
Yep.
But I want Cineperk really, really bad.
Oh, yeah.
That's, yeah. Do it.
No.
Do it. Buy
Can you say something short? Why do you want it? Because there's a lot of percussion libraries out there.
It's just because of the room, you know. I think the room, that room is very flattering for percussion and brass instruments, and yeah. That's the main reason, really. I just really like it,
You gotta do it now before the month is over.
It's true. You're right. The brass is also something that Cine Samples really have nailed. I think.
But the thing is, I already have percussion, so I cannot really. I have good ones, so I cannot really motivate. You know.
I think composers would struggle with this shit. Yeah.
Exactly. I think all of us, we're kind of at a point where, because we have the libraries we need, we have the core fundamentals, Black Friday isn't as appealing to us, right? If it's someone's just starting out, then it's like a playground. They everywhere you look, there's just something to digest and consider downloading. But I guess you really have to just ask yourself, like, what do these libraries do that my current libraries are not doing for me? And if you can answer that question ask yourself if it's going to benefit your music ultimately, then it's a good option to go for it. But
yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you really, there's something you absolutely know, you've done the research, you know it now, obviously it's a good time because it's cheaper. But really be careful. It's like, oh, I want this added library. Personally, this year, I'm not going to buy anything. I know there are a lot of good deals, but at the moment, I don't need truly anything. Not that I have everything. Oh, I can always expand, truly. But at the moment, it's like, it's not that I need another library. So, no.
I've been buying a few, and I actually have a strategy because I can get carried away. I think Simeon is playing the part of both the angel and the demon sitting on his shoulder, and they're both saying the same thing, buy it. What I do is, like, I make a list of all the things that I want to buy. I don't buy them. I'm like, okay, I'm making a list, and then I can buy them at the last date before the Black Friday is off. And then my rule is, like, I have to check this list several times, not buy directly. So then I can check myself, because after having done that a couple of days, I have more time to think about it, and I start removing things from the list. I'm like, no, that was just an impulse that I had because it looks cool. I don't really need it, like you said, Samuel, and so on. So that's my strategy. But of course, as I said, I'm buying the whole Vienna special edition 9-volume set for half price. So that's quite a lot. And then it just turned out that one of the games we're doing, we're going to launch it in China. So we have a publisher partner there. Mm-hmm. So we're doing some more content for the game that's like a Chinese faction or a faction based on Chinese mythology. So I'm going to compose some music that fits that. Mm-hmm. So, and then I found the Native Instrument has a...
Yes.
Bundle with ethnic East Asian instruments, and that was also half price. So I was like, yeah, that's perfect.
I think you bring up a good point. It's a waiting period, and not just pulling the trigger, not just being so instantaneous. So it's like you see something, you sleep on it for a couple of days, and if you wake up and you still feel that and whatever, the waiting period is, that's a very prudent approach to do it.
Actually, Lautaro, I just wanted to say that if you want me to save you some money, I kind of know about all those sections, and you might not need all of them. If there's an amazing bundle, you know, sure, go ahead. But I'm just saying that if it can save you a lot of extensions that most orchestras don't have, that you don't need unless you really want to go out there and use, you know, the, I don't know, second contra trombone or something like that. I mean, it's just things that most people don't use. Extensions.
You mean the Vienna period? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. I'll call you.
I just wanted to say, actually, if money was no object, because that's definitely something to consider, I would definitely get all of the cinematic studios. I don't have
them. I mean, I will get everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think most of us
generally.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I wouldn't get anything because something that a lot of people don't think about, but here's one of my advice here. Like, as we said before, these are instruments. They really are. And you have to learn them. And the thing is, I know my instruments fairly well now, so I can just start working. If I'm buying another library, even though it's so exciting, I still don't know it. And I have to sort of relearn it. And that takes away time from creativity. So even though I love it, it's actually interesting now when I'm starting to do more reviews, which I appreciate. I'm also like, wow, all these libraries I have to look at.
And you've got to learn them. You've got to learn them very quickly.
Some libraries have a massive learning curve. Yeah. Like, for example, I use sample modeling very often for the horns and the trumpets. I love it. Mm. And it's been in my template for the past 3 years. Mm. But, I mean, it's just so difficult to learn to play, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I feel like I'm only scratching the surface, you know?
Yeah.
After 3 years.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But I feel like that goes for most bigger libraries. I mean, and also because the way they're made. I mean, one of the reasons I made this learn the East and West libraries is because, I don't know if we should blame East West or their manuals, but most people didn't know how to use those libraries still 10 years later. So, yeah, I think that goes for a lot of libraries. I mean, cinematic, for example, I have the solo strings. I really like them. I think it's one of the best out there.
I don't have those.
Yeah.
But I want them, though.
I do tell you something. If I'm just going to have some solo violin, I'd rather go for another library if I write something quick, because the work...
I know what you mean, yeah.
To get a good sound out of that. And so, yeah, that's what I'm so worried about, getting those libraries, because I really love them. But, like, oof, it's going to be a lot of work. Actually, somebody just sent me a Swedish guy... I hope we can see it here. Breath controller. I'm going to learn how to use this. So far, it's really cool, and then I'm going to make a video about it. But it's not just breath. It's also your whole head movement. So I was thinking, maybe you can, you know, sometimes when you do this, when you get all emotional, you know, maybe I can use that in order to control.
Does it have the bite? Do you have bite control as well?
Yep.
Yeah. Bite, so you have all of those areas of expression.
And that's great. That's actually on my list. So that's really good. I'll wait for your video.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting Swedish company. There are probably other ones, but this one is quite nice. Any other, Simeon, I'm sure you have a load of deals or any ideas.
Well, Cinematic Studio Series is 25% off through the 1st of December. Bring your music to life. A full orchestra at your fingertips. Buy it today, and we'll throw in the kazoo library sampled with 25 velocity layers.
Oh, really?
I'm kidding.
I know they don't need to, but I wish they had a bigger discount.
Yeah.
They don't need to.
See, that's the thing. What causes you to pull the trigger? At what point do you say, ooh, that's it. That's the sweet spot. And honestly, 25% is just, is a little, it's not as compelling. And this is another trick that they're doing, though. But so some sales, you've got to be careful, because they say up to 50%. Mm. Or up to 80%. So they throw the big number out there, up to 80. So you think everything's 50 or everything's 80, but no, it's selective. And so I'm not a big fan of that. I'm saying, you know, if you're having a sale, just have the sale and just stick it up there.
If you like 8DO, some of the instruments, they have pretty amazing sales right now. I'm not trying to sell them, or I'm just saying that they're actually going pretty hard on right now.
Oh, yeah.
And you even get free instruments. So so if you have looked at 8DO, if you really wanted some library there, then maybe now's the time. Yeah. And how about orchestra tools? They're always expensive too, or they don't need to have a sale.
They are. And they've just released the Berlin for the sign player as well. And I think that is 50% off.
Is it different? Is it different because it's now in the sign player?
Well, what they do in the sign player is you have the compression. They've got their compression that is fabulous. Oh, so yeah. they comp- they compress 229 gigabytes into 102 gigabytes using the their sign compression algorithm.
And they also have a pretty nice purge function. It's similar to Kontakt, but I think it's a little smarter. Yep.
And I think you can merge microphones as well and create some kind of, you know, I don't know how to describe it. Some kind of, like, you print the microphone selection into the samples and it's basically that. Mm-hmm. So basically you're not using the three instances of the three microphones all the time. It's like you're using only one.
Yeah. It's a composite. It creates a composite mix. Yeah, probably. I would say one thing. I would say support the smaller developers when you can. Mm-hmm. That is one of the greatest blessings that I discovered in my experience over the past year and a half or so, is that there are some fabulous smaller developers. Westwood Instruments is absolutely fabulous. Audio Brewers is one of my favorites. I really love what Alejandro's doing with pushing into immersive audio with his Kontakt libraries. He is the first person, the first developer that is embracing immersive audio and doing the libraries in ambisonics and 3D. So you have a stereo version and then you have an ambisonics version. So you can mix in Kontakt in 3D and immersive audio. And now with Logic supporting immersive audio natively, it is like you can create some amazing things. So and Experimenter Project Flavio has created some beautiful libraries. So the smaller developers, man, just if you can, just Element Zero G, the guy Stefano Marcelli. I just got a hold of Elements from him. He's the developer behind the Etherus series. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, $75 is a power. It's so full of stuff. I mean, it's just beautiful. So support the smaller guys too, because they are doing some amazing things.
We've gone for 1.5 hours, which is a little bit longer than we normally do, but we had so many guests and I really enjoyed it so far.
This is awesome. Yeah.
Wonderful. But I thought before we finish the show, at least I would like to know, where can we find out about you guys? I mean, I'm sure most people watching know you guys already, but just say, where can they find out? Where can you find your webpage or YouTube or whatever you're up to next? Where do you start, Chris?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, my main connecting platform here is on YouTube, and you just type my name, Christopher CUSIU. Mm-hmm. And also, if anyone's interested in some more material, maybe a course or anything like that, or coaching, my website, ChristopherCU.com, is always open. And
find any information
there. Thank you.
So, Mattia.
Yeah, for me, it's the same. I'm very active on YouTube. I do have a website, but I'm not very good at updating it. So
it's a nice website.
Yeah, but you can easily find me on YouTube. You just type my name, Mattia. I'm usually the first one to pop up, hopefully.
Cool. Lautaro.
I'm very active, mostly at home. But I've fortunately been so busy since I started prematurely this year, so I haven't really gotten to put together my website and stuff, so I don't really have anything more than my SoundCloud. It's under my name, some music that I put out is on Spotify and iTunes, and I think everywhere I've used one of these services. So otherwise talk to Sam.
But do you find your music, if you search for your name on Spotify, do you find the music or?
I hope so.
Yeah. I do know of your SoundCloud, for example. So you upload music there quite regularly, no?
Or? Yeah, actually, most of my music is private there, but I have some lists that are linked to games. Obsidian Prince is coming out in January or February. It's on Steam Early Access. So you can listen to part of the soundtrack there. And then also Heroes Hour, the game that I'm working on now. I think that it's possible to hear some of the soundtrack there. Or maybe not. I think it's private. Maybe I should do it. So it's possible to hear in the SoundCloud. And then I have an album that I made out of songs for games that were never published. So it's called One Up, and it's on Spotify, and you can hear it on SoundCloud, and I think on YouTube, and even TikTok, everywhere. It's just my name. You can find it. I don't have a cool pseudonym. Maybe I should have one. Oh yeah, I see Simeon.
Yeah, Simeon. Simeon's great at looking
stuff up. Yeah, that's it. It has really cool pixelated retro graphics.
Okay, cool. So for me, well, I have my channel, Second Tier Sound, as you might know, where I do videos. A lot has been reviews lately. It's just been there. I got so many. I'm like, Jesus Christ. I'm trying to get back to how to actually teach stuff, because that's what I normally do. How to work in a DAW, how to orchestrate, stuff like that. Yes, I do create a lot of music, but it's usually sort of, it's within rights, but it's bought, so I can't really show it off anywhere. Funny thing, I just I uploaded a song a while ago, and a company bought, well, they share their rights with me now. So I got a copyright claim to my own channel, which is hilarious. No, it's not a problem at all, because it was just...
It's not a strike, off. Yeah. No, as long as it's not a strike.
No, I just thought it was hilarious, because it now if you click that video, you can still watch it. Then the music comes up, and it says I wrote it. Then down there it says, you know, the original, what do you call it, composer Samuel, my name is right there. So it's like, okay.
Yeah.
But it's...
That's weird.
Yeah. But that's not a problem. I didn't monetize it, and I didn't think it would be... I thought it probably would happen. But my music is sort of locked into different places. So, but anyway, my YouTube channel is where I have most of my stuff. You can find me. Yep. Simeon.
Yeah, well, youtube.com/PraiseTracks. PraiseTracks.com is where, you know, and I'm guilty of not updating it. I'm trying to transition over to a new website layout, and but PraiseTracks.com, and you can find me on most all of the streaming platforms, Simeon Ambergy, and I'll be there. It's just, and you know, I'm discovering, I guess, that what my channel is experiential. It's experiencing these musical libraries and giving you a chance to discover them along with me, because and I do most things live. I just jump on live and just go for it, and it's very exciting. It's very scary sometimes, but I love the community. I love you guys. This community that we have. This fellowship that we have of music and the shared love for music and creating beautiful things to stir people, to challenge people. It's been such a blessing. And, you know, so I'm very grateful for that opportunity. So, and this weekend, so things, I'm going to be doing a Christmas concert. So I'll be involved in that after Thanksgiving, and just slowly but surely things are kind of coming back. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, awesome. Wow.
So just wanted to say that this was a great pleasure to have all you guys. We really have to think about having you back again.
We need to do another one of these. Yeah, this is fantastic.
But I just wanted to say that I haven't talked to Simi yet. We were planning a little bit, but I think that it probably won't be a podcast in 2 weeks, because it's Christmas and all that stuff. Maybe if we surprise you, we find time and all that, we will come back and do a Christmas special. But otherwise, probably most likely we won't see any podcast until next year, basically, after New Year. So then we'll see what happens and how he's starting to play there. Same, you know? But anyway, I just want to say I truly enjoy this. It's great to have you guys on. Really appreciate it. And yeah, that's it for this time, and hope to see you guys soon. Take lots of care.
Thanks so much.
Bye. See you guys.
Thank you. Bye.
That's the perfect sound for...